Good evening. This week's parsha is Tazria. We're after Rosh Chodesh Nisan before, but we're still a little week and a half before Pesach. So this Shabbos is not Shabbos HaGadol. Next Shabbos is. So it's just relatively regular Shabbos, just the parsha of Tazria because it's a leap year. Often Tazria Mitzora is a double parsha. Again, this year it's a leap year, so it's singular. It's by itself. So I want to do is just to discuss just for a few moments the opening of the parsha, which talks not about the laws of tsaras, of leprosy, which is the bulk of the parsha, but rather the laws of the yoledes, of the woman who gives birth. And the common denominator between the woman who gives birth and the mitzora is that they both undergo a period of tumah. Of we'll just say it in English, a period of ritual impurity. So I want to address two very famous and somewhat troubling questions on the surface. Number one, why is it that we generally assume that a mitzora, someone has leprosy, did something wrong, and then perhaps the tumah, the impurity, is some sort of punishment. But the yoledes, the woman who gave birth, what could be more beautiful? And what she just did, bringing life into this world, another Jewish child. So why in the world should she undergo this process of tumah, of again ritual impurity? And then perhaps even more troubling is the question of that at the end of that purification process, she brings two korbanos, two sacrifices, where the Torah tells us the following: Umlos yimei tara lebeinu labas tavi kevas. Ben shnaso le'olah, one sacrifice is a whole burnt offering, which, okay, that sounds good. That's a korban that we bring, showing our dedication to Hashem. It's entirely burnt upon the altar. But the seemingly problematic offering is the next one, ben yonah usur lechatas. She brings a sin offering as well. And again, many ask the question of sin offering. Again, what when you commit a sin, when you eat something non-kosher, you violate Shabbos. There's lots of sins, that you can do. But giving birth, again, seems to be a mitzvah, the most holiest thing that you can do, again, to bring another life into this world. So again, so why the tumah process? Why this impurity? And why the chatas? And why the sin offering? So I'd like to suggest, first of all, regarding the tumah, the ritual impurity, is something that I heard in our shul a number of years ago from Menachem Liebtag. I imagine he, I didn't check it, but I'm sure he has this written up online as well. And he had a very interesting approach. And he said that, if you look at all the individuals in the Torah who have tumah, so, some you could argue maybe it's as a result of some sort of a sin and it's some sort of a process of atonement. But for other people, it seems to be not at all a sin. And so, besides the Yoledes, the woman who gave birth, another person who becomes Tameh is someone who comes in contact with the dead, right? Someone who's involved in a Jewish funeral, burial. And again, you can ask the question, that makes you tamei? You just did a beautiful mitzvah. That's the ultimate mitzvah, the chesed shel emes, right? That we all participated over the years in that final act of kindness for another human being, of taking care of the needs and actually being at the cemetery, and doing that burial, allowing the soul to transition to the next world, caring for a loved one in their final moments, or a physician who perhaps all very often may come in contact with the dead and tries their best to improve their life, to get them better, and so why in the world should such a person again be labeled as tamei and have to go through this impurity and ultimate purification process, and what did they do wrong? Another great question, also from this week's parsha, is the nida, a woman just in her regular monthly cycle, when she has her monthly period, again becomes tamei. Again, it's just automatic. It's not something that she just happens biologically. Why should that happen? The only one who becomes tame that seemingly maybe is some sort of mistake or sin is the Metzora. Okay. But why do the other people all become tame? So I'm not sure if Rabbi Liebtag said this, but perhaps a hint to understanding the approach that he suggests is that on Yom Kippur, we'll read about this in 2 weeks, or after Pesach, Parshas Achimos. We read about the whole process of Yom Kippur, so the very well-known pasuk that we say over and over again on Yom Kippur, we say Lifnei Hashem Titaru, that before Hashem you shall become purified, you shall become purified, which the implication is that before Yom Kippur I was not purified. I was perhaps in some form of tumah, some form of impurity. And so what happens on Yom Kippur? What do we try to accomplish during the Aseret Yemei Teshuvah? I know Pesach is coming up, but every rabbi knows as soon as Pesach is over, the next thing you're thinking about is Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. So a little prelude to that. So we're thinking about during that time period, Elul, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, about improving ourselves, of working upon ourselves, of reflecting upon our past actions and our past deeds. Scrutinizing our behavior, our words, our human interactions, our relationship with Hashem, and being honest up front with ourselves, and recognizing that sometimes, that we did things that we should not have done, things that we could have done better, and then we make every effort, and we exert ourselves, and we make commitments to doing things better, moving forward. So if that's the case, so, and then ultimately, so if we do that correctly, Yom Kippur lifnei Hashem titaru. Right, on Yom Kippur, you shall be tahor, purified. But first, I'm in that state of tumeah, perhaps. And so, perhaps that state of that period of tumeah, again, not some form of punishment, but rather, and this is Rabbi Liebtag's suggestion, it's a time of reflection. It's a time of like a timeout, in a sense. You have a little kid, a timeout. It's time to think about your actions, to think about what just occurred. And so, if you go through each one of these individuals who are become tamei, the argument is that they're not necessarily being punished, but rather it's a divine opportunity, and it's imposed by God to tell the person to stop and to think and to reflect upon what does happen. So let's start with the Metzora. With the Metzora, again, we generally assume that someone gets saras is because of some sort of sin, most famously a lashon hara. They gossiped. The Gemara actually gives us 7 reasons in Maseches Erechin as to why a person could get a tzaras. It comes from arrogance, from being stingy, a whole bunch of reasons. So perhaps the person who gets the tzaras, God is telling the person, you need to pause. You need to reflect. You need to really think about what it is that that you did, and what are why did it happen. And what are your strategies you're going to have moving forward to avoid that from recurring in the future? And so it's an opportunity. It's not so much a punishment, but it's an opportunity for you to really think and reflect upon what occurred and what can be perhaps you can do differently the next time around. So that's with the Metzora. When it comes to the person who came in contact with the dead, so again, we said that's you're doing a mitzvah by taking care of them, by burying them. So, but perhaps the point is that you just witnessed the end of someone's earthly sojourn, and you need to think about that. You need to reflect about first about the person themselves, who that person was, how they impacted your life. You shouldn't just let the moment pass. Like often in a lot of societies, if someone dies, they bury them, and then they're back in work later that afternoon. In Judaism, we have this whole mourning process of Shiva and Shloshim and preparing for them for 12-month period. We're supposed to think about the loved one, think about the friend or the person who's no longer here. Think about the impact that they made and how that their life and their actions and their deeds should continue to impact my life and guide my life. You shouldn't just let the moment go without reflecting on what happened. If you're the physician, you're the doctor, and you're you were taking care of the patient. So, are there things you could have done better? What can you learn, from the process? If you, God forbid, witnessed a murder and you were there at the time. So again, not just to move on, but to the Torah is forcing us to process, that transition of from one world to the next that we just encountered. That perhaps can be the tumah of the tumah meith regarding the woman who give who becomes who's an Ida. So every month, right? There was a potential for life. There was a potential for a child to be for a fetus to be created. And that passed. That did not occur. So to think about that and think about the opportunity that moving forward of bringing life into this world. To recognize the blessing that it is be able to do that. And then finally, our question, the question of the Yoledes. So now that you did bring life into this world, so now you have to think about now what am I going to do as a mother to raise this child, right? What are the values that I want to instill within this child? It's not just there's going to be a lot of time that it's just going to be, the grind and the feedings and the changing the diapers and getting the kid off to school and taking them to, to baseball practice and like there's lots of going through the motions, but maybe you need to have a little bit of a time to actually reflect on greater values that you want to instill within the child that you just brought it into this world in terms of how you're going to raise the child and what lessons and teachings and in terms of being a Jew and Jewish values are going to be imparted to this child. So Tuba, looking at this, again, a very interesting approach, is this opportunity that God gives us, forces upon us to reflect on those moments. And that's going to the Fnei Hashem Titaru of Yom Kippur, that the Yom Kippur is this moment for us collectively as a people, as a nation, as human beings and as individuals, to reflect on the past and then to think about what are the good things that we did, what are the things that we need to do better, and then hopefully if we make those commitments, use the time wisely, then you're in a state of tahara. Now you're able to move forward again within the confines of any of these issues of tumah we just discussed. So that's perhaps an approach to understanding the tumah of the Yoledes. And again, there's not really a good English word to translate. When we often translate it as impure, that sounds like something bad. But this approach is to suggest that no, it's not something bad. It's actually an opportunity. It's a gift on some levels. And perhaps that there is no good English translation for the word tumah, other than say that maybe a time out and then tara is a time back in, perhaps. And then finally, the question of the korban chatas, the sin offering. Okay, so if the tumah is nothing about doing anything bad, so then what's the chatas? What's the sin offering? So there are a couple of approaches that are out there. One is offered by Chazal, by our rabbis. They're bothered by this question. The Gemara in Maseches Nida asked this question, and the Gemara says, well, maybe the mother did do something that was not wonderful. On the surface, it's understandable, but even though it's understandable, really, it's not the ideal, not appropriate. And so, what is it that maybe the mother did that's not so great? It could be, again, it's understandable, but it could be after 9 months of very difficult, challenging pregnancy of pain and of the extra weight of carrying the baby and the kicking and the nausea and all this sometimes the challenges and complications that can emerge through our pregnancy, and then of course the actual birth itself and the pain that's associated with it. So there's a good chance, as the Gemara, that a woman might say, "I'm never doing this again." Right? That this is last time that this is happening, or even regret that going through this the process, and so often in life. It's understandable that often we get frustrated, and there's moments in life that I wish I never did this, and there's regret, and there's even anger. Sometimes the anger is directed, at God, which is often again understandable, but sometimes we need to take a deep breath and look at the bigger picture to see Now, in this case, the blessing that ultimately that ensues life, although the process was not certainly not a fun process, it could be a very painful and scary and frightening process, but ultimately it led to something beautiful, something w wonderful. And sometimes in life, you have to go through a lot of aggravation and struggle in order to reach blessings. And whether that's with childbirth, that's with raising children, that's with having a country, a state of Israel, right? This life is full of great challenges and full of adversity and unfortunately full of a lot of pain, agony and suffering. But is it directed towards some higher goal? Is there some outcome that ultimately emerges that is one of blessing? And of course, a lot of things sometimes we can't always see those blessings. That's the whole book of Eov struggling with why we suffer and pain and things of that nature. So that's a very difficult conversation. But at least when it comes to the childbirth, the outcome is readily apparent that now there is life. Now there's a opportunity. And so for those moments, even though they're understandable, but those moments of perhaps of regret, that requires some sort of atonement that requires a sin offering. So that's how our rabbis, that's how Chazal understand. I was looking in Rabbi Golden's book on the Parsha, and he raises this question, but he cites one other possibility, and then he gives his own interesting suggestion. The other possibility that he, or approach that he cites is that he says that the Rabbeinu Bechaye and the Kli Yakar, and very interestingly, they both suggest that the sin offering, it's not that the woman herself did any sin, but the original mother who gave birth sinned, right? It was Chava, and Chava is the one who sinned. And in fact, why? Right? The Torah says, why do women have to go through such pain and agony and challenge and difficulty during the 9 months and the actual labor and delivery? Because of Chava's sin. And so this is somehow of atonement for that original mistake of Chava. Rabbi Golden took it a step further. He said, on the one hand, that seems a little bit unfair, just because Chava sinned, so I have to bring a sin offering. It was not my sin; it was her sin. But perhaps he said a very nice message. Perhaps the takeaway is that, on one hand, yeah, I didn't sin, but all of our actions often can impact other people. Right, it's often not fair that someone has to suffer the consequences because of our actions. But reality, that's often what takes place. Right, often if we make our poor choices in life, so other people are adversely affected by it. They explain that a pasuk that appears in all the way at the end of the Torah and Parshas Hazino, that we say Hatzor Tamim Palo, that all of God's actions, Kichol Drachav Mishpat, all of God's actions are righteous. That God, as a judge, all the everything that results of the as a result of God's decisions are justice. In other words, when God does something, so it might have a lot of reverberations, but it's all righteous from God's end. It's all intended. But when you have like a human judge, if you have a human, if someone comes before a judge, let's say they did some terrible crime. And the judge sentenced that person to 30 years in prison, 30 years to life. Okay, so is that a just decision? You could argue, yeah, it is. But so many other people are going to be affected by this person being thrown in jail. First and foremost, this person's family. Could be this person that was the breadwinner at home. Maybe this person actually was a very good father. He just was a terrible criminal or whatever, but he was part of the mob. So, but his family, he was wonderful. So now his children, his wife, are going to suffer as a result of him in jail. Maybe the other criminals in jail are going to suffer because now he's there, because he's going to be a lousy cellmate, to other people. In other words, so the judge obviously can't, judge has to judge the case as is, but God's ju justice is, that the way it reverberates, even though we don't understand it, we assume it right, we believe it's just for however it unfolds. But not from a human perspective. So when Chava sins, every woman since Chava didn't do anything wrong, but they're impacted by Chava's actions, and that's the same true with the parents. Right, that a parent, you can make a poor decision as a parent, and that can adversely affect your children. You have to think about that, right? The decisions that you make and the example that you set and how your children learn from it, it can hopefully they'll be positive and they'll be a positive influence, but they can also unfortunately be a negative influence. And so perhaps the sin offering, again, which reminds us of Chava's original sin and how it now impacts us. It's also to think the parents will think about how their actions will impact their children as well. Finally, an approach that Rabbi Golden himself created, I thought it was a nice idea. And he said that it's interesting the when it comes to a korban, very often these two korbanos go together, an ola and a chatas, a whole burnt offering and a sin offering. And usually the way it works that the sin offering is brought first, and only afterwards is the ola, which makes a lot of sense because first you want to atone for the past, the sin offering, and then the ola, then the whole burnt offering is for the future, and now I'm reconnecting to God. What's interesting is that in the Torah's presentation of the laws of these korbanos for this yoledet, woman who gave birth, it's presented the opposite. First, it mentions the ola, the whole burnt offering. And only after it's a sin offering. And to make it even more confusing and complicated, Chazal, rabbis say that we have a tradition that actually the sin offering was brought first, like it usually is. So, which obviously begs the question, so why was it mentioned second if it's really brought first? So, Rabbi Golden's interesting homiletic suggestion is that perhaps what happens with parenthood is that, when you finally are blessed with having a child. So, that moment that you hold the child for the first time, you're in the state of bliss and and you see the child is so pure and so beautiful and so soft and so sweet and so it's wonderful and you're so full of joy and happiness. But then what happens over time? Then you gotta raise the kid. And initially it's you're up at 3 in the morning and you can barely, keep your eyes open and you're changing diapers constantly, and the kid is spitting up on you, and then I was recently had a meeting with the city of Southfield regarding some things with the school next door to our school and sort of changes that the school is making to their building, and we're looking at a map of the school. Like there's this huge grass area behind the school that leads ultimately to to some streets like Coventry Woods, and the city man from the city said we barely use that area. So I said, oh, sometimes I see the kids playing soccer there. He goes, yeah, they play soccer closer, closer to this school, but not the part that's much further away. And he made a comment like we don't want the teachers chasing the kids all the way down there. So that reminded me of the, I won't mention which kid of mine it was, that we were walking from Shul once, and the kid decided that they didn't want to follow us, and the kid ran all the way to the kid was 3 years old and ran all the way to the end of that field. And we're having to run after the kid. And those moments, you're so upset and angry at the child, and then eventually they become teenagers, and then whatever. There's lots of moments along the way in parenthood where there can be a lot of frustration and perhaps, as Golden said, even regret at some moments, and maybe some deep concerns about the child. And it's at those moments that maybe. In the future, right? Maybe he said the korban chatas homiletically is a sin offering about the times in the future that I will have that regret, and I'm sort of preempting those moments by bringing the sin offering now, and to remind me about those moments. And that's an interesting way of looking at it, but that's very interesting the way the Torah is presenting the yoledes. Yoledes is something is a bracha. It's a gift from Hashem to be able to bring a child into this world. It's a huge responsibility, and perhaps these laws of Tumah and the Korban Chatas actually are not in any way sins in any way, or if they are, they're things to keep us focused as parents, help us recognize the responsibility that we have to have gratitude to Hashem for bringing us to this point. But now to understand that it's now my job as a parent, it just begins at this moment. Right? Now's the hard work to hopefully instill values and to model appropriate behavior so that this child will grow up to be a someone who will be a blessing, and someone who ultimately will follow and embrace Hashem and our Torah and our people. Okay, wishing everyone a wonderful Shabbos.